Paging Dr. Nerdlove. Paging Dr. Nerdlove. Today, I got to speak with the one and only Harris O'Malley, the geek turned guru behind one of the most popular men's dating sites, Dr. Nerdlove. Not only was he an expert conversationalist, he gave some incredible tactical advice to anyone looking to create a flawless first impression, ease social anxieties, and he also shared his story about how he pivoted from the pickup community and used that expertise to start building genuine and authentic relationships. So get ready to learn and laugh as this interview was an absolute blast. So sit tight and get ready.
Hello, everyone. Today, I am extremely excited to welcome Harris O'Malley to our show, better known as Dr. Nerdlove. He has a very successful website called Paging Dr. Nerdlove, where he provides advice to self-proclaimed geeks. He's been featured on Nightline, The Guardian, New York Magazine, Huffington Post, Wired, BuzzFeed, Lifehacker, NeilStrauss.com, and many, many more. Harris appears regularly on the podcast, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He is the author of multiple books and works with men one-on-one to teach them everything from online dating to increased social skills, and he has taken time out of his very busy schedule to be with us today. Thank you so much, Harris, for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, that's a lot to take in, so would you be able to tell our audience who you are and what you do?
Short version is I'm a writer and a dating coach, and I teach guys predominantly how to date and how to have better social skills. The slightly longer version is I started off in the pickup artist scene, where I like pretty much everybody I've worked with or write about or write to, I had the same problems, frequently worse. And My Batman moment, as I like to call it, came when, after having gone head-to-head with one of my oldest and dearest friends over the same girl, and lost badly, for, you know, lost implies that there was a contest, but point being is, I struck out so hard that my future generations wept to see it happen. And I ended up going to Google and typing in how to get good with girls, and found Neil Strauss's The Game, and from there, just this light turned on in my head that said, oh shit, I don't need to be born with this. Like, I can learn how to get better. And so I dove headfirst into the pickup artist scene with the passion of the newly converted. And that's part of why it took me as long as it did to get out of the pickup artist scene, because while I was having a lot of success and I was having this great feeling of like, oh my God, I this whole new world has opened up to me and I am now this new and different person, it was turning me into a horribly manipulative, cynical asshole. Literally all the only way that I had of interacting with pretty much anyone was from this very adversarial, very status obsessed idea of I have to be the head mother in the room. And if I'm not, then I have to be doing whatever it takes to get there. If there were women, then I had to make sure that, like, I was always showing my highest value and making sure that everybody knew that if they wanted those girls, they were going to have to fight me for them. And that the girls was always like, what do I have to do to get you to go home with me? And yeah, I hit the wall. I don't think anybody can go through that and not hit the wall at some point, because you can only be a manipulative asshole for so long before you start to feel your soul rot. And so as one night, I was getting ready to go home with someone, and I realized not only do I not like this person, but I don't like the bar that I met her in, and I'm already trying to figure out how I'm going to get away from her and never actually talk to her ever again. And that's the point where I was like, what the hell am I doing? I had to say, like, you know what, I'm sorry, I can't do this, you're a lovely person, have a good night. And I went home and basically cried my eyes out and didn't know why. And the next morning, I thought to myself, okay, I can't keep doing this, I have to change. But at the same time, I liked that I was having a lot of sex, so I wanted to know, is there a way that I could do this and be a decent person and still, you know, still have the social success and still get laid and still meet women, but without doing all these things that made me feel awful? And a lot of what I had to do was go back to the very basics and examine everything about what I had been taught and what I had learned and what I had assumed and just question it all. Like, why were we told this thing? Why does this technique work? Why does this, you know, why are we supposed to think that this doesn't work? And yeah, and so much of it was just going back and studying human sexuality and human connection and how persuasion works and influence and social proof and ideas of what male and female sexuality were and what they actually are. And as I'm going through all this, I'm finding ways that I'm like, oh, I can actually incorporate this new thing into my life that's authentically who I am, that lets me connect with people on a very real level. So I'm not just saying whatever any line it takes to get in bed. I'm actually getting to know them. We are actually having a real connection. And, you know, I'm having so much more fun. Like, the people I'm meeting, I like them better more often than not. Like, we stayed friends, even if the sexual side of the relationship didn't keep going. And more importantly, I didn't go home every night feeling just god-awful, especially in nights when it didn't go well. Because now it wasn't just like, if I don't get laid, then who am I? Now it's just like, all right, well, I met this amazing person. Maybe something will happen. Maybe it won't. I'm okay with both of these. And it made me happier. And during all of this, I was on the podcast, The League of Extremely Ordinary Gentlemen, and we did an episode about Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And so we called it The League versus Our Evil Exes, and we were talking about our past relationships. And as the guy who was kind of the man about town, as it were, for The League, I took point on a lot of the listener questions. And then later on, we did another episode that came up for Valentine's Day. And so we took a lot of dating advice questions, and I kind of took the lead on those as well. And then we didn't get to all the questions, so I got onto the forums and answered some more, and I thought that was it. And then more people sent more questions, and I answered those. And then more people sent more questions. And it kind of got to the point of, like, I got to do something with this. And so that's basically how Dr. Nerdlove got started. And it literally just came out of, these people have questions, and I want to give people the information that I wish I had had pretty much from the day I turned 13 onwards.
And how long ago was all that?
The site opened in June of 2011. And it has been a crazy roller coaster ever since.
That's awesome. And I've read quite a few of your blogs. I've followed your pages for ages. And you've got some quality content on there. And I can agree with some of the things you said in return of the game. And another person we recently interviewed, Nick Notice, got started in the same scene and just figured, you know, there's got to be a more authentic, a more genuine way to connect with people. And I love that, you know, both of you have found your different niches within that and using the skills that from Pickup, but taking it to a more evolved and sort of a leveling up.
Yeah. One of the things I often, like, people are kind of surprised when I say, no, I really value the time that I spent in the Pickup scene. Because I learned a lot, and one of the most important things that I learned was how much of who I thought I was and what I was capable of was based around my idea of my limits, not around what was actually possible. And the going to that and learning so many things and learning a lot of stuff about, like, fashion and how to connect with people was really useful. And honestly, having a core group of guys to be there with and to talk about life and to share our anxieties and our worries about the stuff was really useful. It's just that it also came wrapped in this really toxic attitude. And so if we can separate the two, if we can take the toxic side out, then I think it's really useful. So yeah, I mean, part of the problem is everybody looked at the game and thought it was an instruction manual, myself included, admittedly, and didn't realize Neil Strauss is writing a story about really unhappy people. And yeah, everybody in there is miserable and dysfunctional. But everybody just took it and went, oh yeah, no, I want to do what they're doing. Never mind that it ends with them all crying and, like, some suicidal and yeah.
Oh yeah. No, it was a wonderful book. Like you said, and it just opens your eyes. And when, you know, you're coaching that to people, it's incredible to see that light bulb moment when people realize what they can do when they have those right steps.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is my favorite time when somebody goes like, oh, Oh, that makes sense. Oh, I never thought about it like that. And just the moment that they realize the world has opened to them in a way that it never has before. And now it's just, instead of being something scary, it is full of potential. And it is just, it is now an adventure, not just something they have to have nightmares about, or something that only exists for other people.
That's exactly it. And now, what would you say is some of your favorite parts of working one-on-one with the gentleman that you do work with?
Honestly, just when that moment happens, when that, like, oh my God, I have hope, like, there are answers to this, I have a plan, that is so, that makes everything worth it. That is the part that just makes me feel amazing afterwards.
That's awesome. Now, to go back just a little bit, when we listed off that long list of publications that you've been writing for, how did you sort of get into, you know, not only for your own website, but for other websites as well?
It, honestly, I wish I had a thing that I could point to and say, this is how you get it done. In my case, it was pure luck. I was doing all right on my own up until I wrote a column called Nerds and Male Privilege. And that thing went stupid mega viral. And it was the aftermath of that having just rocketed all over the internet that people kind of started paying attention to me and saying, like, hey, could we interview you? Hey, could we reprint this? Could we reprint this this thing? Could you do a piece over here? And yeah, it's been kind of astounding that, like, the people who come to me, and that's one of the reasons why I kind of cringe when everyone's like, how do I become a successful blogger? It's like, I don't know. Strictly speaking, I do everything wrong. My columns are entirely too long. I never follow, like, popular trends. I'm kind of winging it.
It's all right. You're creating quality content and you've got a fan base that loves it. So
yeah.
That's awesome. Now, so say you have someone that has reached out and they want to work with you. Where do you start, you know, to get over some of those social anxieties?
A lot of what I start with is, okay, what would you do if you weren't afraid? And then what's stopping you from doing these things? And really kind of digging down, because a lot of times the issues that people have are not the issues they think they do. Where people want to know, like, hey, I want to talk to this person, but I don't know what to say to them. And then when I tell them, it's like, you go up and you say, hi, you seem like you're really interesting, and I don't know anyone here except the bartender, and I've talked to him twice. So I just wanted to meet you. Hi, my name is. And they're like, well, I can't do that. Yeah, you can. Your feet work. Your mouth works. Just literally, you walk over there and you introduce yourself. But. And the issue isn't that they don't know what to say. The issue is fear. A lot of times it's approach anxiety, because nerds especially have the worst superpower in the world. We have worst case scenario vision, where no matter what it is or how innocent the interaction is, we can see exactly how it's going to go, and it's going to start with saying hello, and it's going to go to getting maced, and then it's going to end up being thrown in jail, and then you're going to have to leave town, change your name, get plastic surgery so no one knows who you are. And it makes perfect sense to you in the moment because you're friggin' terrified. But when you think about it logically, no, none of it's going to happen. But fear is an emotion, and emotions are not logical, so you kind of have to deal with that part before you can get to any of the rest of it. And if it's not an issue of fear, then it's usually an issue of, well, I've got nothing to offer. And the times that I have heard from people who have told me they have nothing to offer after they have gotten done explaining that, like, oh yeah, no, I came to this country when I was 10 years old. I speak 3 languages fluently. I've traveled the world. I've, you know, succeeded in my career. And look, you just told me like 7 amazing things. I speak 2 languages. I speak English and bad English. That alone puts you head and tails above me. You've got, like, a lot of people have way more to offer than they realize. But they think that if they don't live a very specific life, or if they don't have a very specific lifestyle or story, then they are out of the game for some reason. And it's all based on these mistaken ideas of how we're supposed to interact and how we're supposed to be. And we just get caught up in them like they're gospel, and we lose track of the reality of it, where we all have way more potential, we all have way more skill and way more to offer than we ever would realize. it's luminous beings, are we? Not this crude matter.
That's exactly, so many times we work with people in the same way and say, you know what, I want you to make a story portfolio and go through and figure out those interesting things, because people don't give themselves enough credit. And like you said, that is a big crippling fear.
Yeah. And some of what I do is just like, all right, here's how you deal with these fears. Sometimes it is, sometimes you can logic your way through it, not very often, but it's like, if you get someone to literally write down everything that like they have gone through, their life story, you can point to and go like, see, here, these are all amazing things. Other times it's a little bit like exposure therapy, where it's just, you kind of have to go through it and realize that it's not going to kill you. And fear plus survival is confidence. So sometimes it's literally like, all right, you are going to go out and you're going to go say hi to 10 women. That's it. You're going to literally just go up and say, hi, do you know what time it is? And then they're going to realize, okay, well, that was easy. It's like, cool. Now you're going to go up and say, hi, I'm trying to find Mr. Noodle. I'm trying to find Starbucks. I'm trying to find the where I can get some cigarettes. Do you know where? Okay, cool. That was easy enough. Now you're going to just say, now you're going to explain, like, no, I'm sorry. I'm not from around here. Like, and then you kind of have a little short conversation. Again, not very scary. Worst case scenario, someone's going to ignore you. And that's when they realize that's what it's going to be like when they're trying to talk to someone they're interested in. 9 times out of 10, the worst thing that's going to happen is that they're just not going to pay attention to you, which sucks. But these horribly like gut-churning rejections that we imagine, or that we may have experienced in high school, because high school is hell, are not the way that it's going to happen. And speaking from as someone who's gotten rejected more times than I've had hot dinners, the really, really bad rejections don't hurt, because more often than not, they're so absurd as to be funny. It is the ones where nothing happens that hurt the worst, because you can't work with apathy.
That's exactly it. Like you said, that exposure therapy, getting out there, saying it, and what's the worst that can happen. I really think that, just going forward, and whether it's, the cute girl, the lady at the office, and we talk a lot about low stakes environments, making small talk with the bank teller or the grocery store. If you're really worried about the bar scene, then don't start with the bar.
Yeah, and the bar scene is not for everybody. Most people don't meet their future partner or spouse at bars or clubs. Most of us meet them through what we do during the day. So it may be during class, it may be doing work, it may be by going to church. Bars and clubs are a very specific environment, and they get very fetishized, I think. Partially because of stuff like The Game, and partially because of movies. And everybody remembers scenes like, scenes from Swingers with Vince Vaughn having to go up to people. And we kind of think that's how it's supposed to be, or that's where we're going to go meet, like, the people we want to sleep with. If you're living your life and you're just comfortable interacting with people, you're going to meet people everywhere you go. Some of them you're going to want to hook up with, some of them you're going to want to date, some of them both, some neither. But just knowing that you have the option can be... of just talking to them and starting that conversation can be amazing.
That's exactly it. And I think one of the big things that we work with a lot, and I think you would as well, is the body language during the approach.
Oh yeah.
To just make sure you're standing up, you're smiling, you're not looking like a crazy person in the corner with your hands shaking. And
yeah, just a friendly, easygoing smile, keeping your back straight, your shoulders kind of relaxed. Because if you tense up, people are going to notice it, and they're going to get tense too. People are going to take their lead from you. So if you come up and you're stone-faced, they're wondering, like, what the hell's going on with this guy? He looks like he's about to beat my ass. If you walk up and you're smiling, but it's not a real smile, but you kind of got that Joker rictus, the thing that they're expecting is the next words out of your mouth are going to be, I want to lick your rib cage from the inside. Whereas it's just a friendly grin, kind of loose, relaxed body language. One of the things I always tell people is to slow your roll, because when we get really tense, we can get a little twitchy. If you can kind of take a deep breath, calm down, and just move with purpose, but deliberate purpose. So you're just kind of moving slowly instead of like that. you look relaxed, and that's going to make other people relax around you, because the more that you treat this as no big deal, the more that people will respond to it as no big deal.
And that goes as well with the conversation. So many people worry about, what do I say next? Or what's this perfect pickup line? Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's being genuinely interested and letting them give you information to continue the conversation.
Yeah, more often than not, the people you talk to are going to give you everything you need to keep the conversation going as long as you listen. And honestly, listening is one of the best things that you can do when you're meeting someone for the first time, because we're all really used to just waiting for our turn to talk rather than paying attention to the other person. So when someone shows us that they want to know what we have to say, they want to hear from us, they want to hear our thoughts, our opinions, they value our input, that is a gift that nobody else gives us. And so we're going to value that person. They want to hear from us? Oh, God, I'm going to want to stay with you.
That's exactly it. Now, do you have any favorite open-ended questions that you like to use to sort of kickstart those conversations?
A lot of what I do is I usually go with what's going on around us. Like, hey, not necessarily like, hey, I'm here very often, but if there's something, some situational thing has happened, like, oh, man, I have not heard this song in forever. Like, have you ever heard this one? Or is there a song that you've never heard that, like, except out in the wild? Or one of my personal favorites is, I wish I could remember who told me this one, but it's simple and it opens up so many venues. It's literally, so what's your story?
And it just gives them the ball to start talking.
And in so many different ways too, because it could be literally like, well, here's how I got to the Starbucks or to this bar, or it could be, here's how I got to the city or to this job. And now you just bounce right off of that. You take what they had to say, like, oh, okay, find a way to relate to it. One of the easiest ways to make like someone feel more comfortable with you is to find times that you can say, oh, me too, or yes, I get it. Because we like people who are like us. If you can send that vibe of, oh, we're the same tribe, we're the same kind of people, they're going to be more likely to go like, okay, no, I do. I dig it. I get you. You're someone who understands me.
That's it. You know, you can take a shortcut. You don't have to go through the weird, awkward introduction. You talk to someone like you've been old friends for ages, and you just get past that level and you're much more comfortable and at ease.
Yeah, it's like a Jedi mind trick. The best way to get someone to like you is to go in assuming that they already do. Because attitude is destiny. When your attitude is, this person is going to be friendly toward me because we're already friends. This is going to go great. You're going to behave that way. You're priming yourself to see everything in the best possible light. You're going to see things as like, oh, well, they're acting like this because they're interested or because they want to spend more time with me. Whereas if you go in with the mentality of, I wouldn't talk to me. I don't blame you for not wanting to talk to me either. Then that is going to prime your brain to see everything in the worst possible light. You're going to see someone who's kind of shifting in their spot, and they're going to think, oh, they're trying to get away. They're done. They're bored. They don't want to talk to me anymore. When in reality, maybe they're just uncomfortable. Maybe they're cold. You're going to pre-expect rejection. And so you're going to respond as though you've already been rejected. And so you get a little defensive. You may even get a little angry talking with them. And that's going to turn people off. So coming in with the idea of, this is going to go well. This person's going to like me. We're already friends. You're basically setting up the filter, and it may be maybe a little delusional, but a little delusion can help sometimes, because at least now you're responding in a way that is more likely to make you feel warmer and friendlier instead of colder and what the hell is wrong with you.
That's it. I think it brings it back perfectly to what we said at the beginning about mindset. You've just got to be confident that you're someone who's worth that quality conversation and worth the other person's time, and everything is downhill from there.
Yeah, it's shockingly easy to get to know people and to form that connection if you get out of your own way. And 90% of what I teach is just that. It is attitude. It is self. It is like getting rid of the English. I can speak it. The self-limiting beliefs and getting out of your own way. And then the remaining 10% is presentation and social skills.
That's it. Now, what do you recommend for people who are trying to actually end that conversation, but either get a phone number or get in contact again and follow up effectively?
Well, there are a number of ways of doing it, and a lot of it depends on the situation you're in. If it is a case of, well, you're at a party or you're at a bar, then just saying, hey, I'm having a really great time talking to you. I would love to keep, I'd love to see you again, or I'd love to keep this going. How can we make this happen? Or can I, you know, can I contact you on Facebook? Can I contact you on Instagram? Asking like that can really makes it clear. It's like, hey, I would love to see you again. What is the best way we can do this? Another way is, especially if you're having a conversation with somebody at a more low-key environment, like, say, you met at Barnes & Noble, it can help to kind of drop a thing that you're going to be doing, precede the date, as it were, and say, just, this is a thing that you're planning on and that you're excited about, and then later on say, hey, you know what? I'm doing this thing this week. I think you might really enjoy it. Would you like to go? And that is really useful, because when you can make plans for a date, then they're much more likely to actually take your call when you call, or to reply to your text when you text them. Because now you've got plans. Now you're following up, as opposed to just keeping the conversation going.
And it's really no risk to do it that way, because if they don't seem interested, then okay, you don't have to go for some awkward ask and then reject you on giving the phone number.
Yeah, and even better, they're more likely to remember who the hell you are when you text them, instead of having to go like, hey, yeah, so my name is Harry. We met at the library. I was wearing the Doctor Who shirt. You were carrying your Legend of Zelda clutch. Yeah, okay, cool. That can work, but also, depending on where you met them, they may have talked to a dozen people that night and don't necessarily remember everybody. Not because, you know, you're not special, but just because you talk to a lot of people, shit's going to blur after a while.
That's it. Now, if you could boil everything down and you really had to focus on the top three communication skills, what mm-hmm. would you say those would be?
First one I would say is connect with the other person. That is going to be the number one above everything else. We worry too much about impressing and not enough about connecting. So finding the ways that you can say, oh, we're the same. Oh, we have these things in common. That is going to be the most powerful thing. The next one is being genuinely interested in somebody. Anyone can fake being like wanting to hear what somebody else has to say. And it's really obvious. The people who are the most charismatic, and Tom Cruise, no matter how you feel about him, is the master of this. He can make anyone feel like the most fascinating person in the room. And that makes why he is so charismatic. And if you can do that, if you can make someone feel like they are insanely interesting, no matter how boring they think they are, that is going to be impressive. And that is just from active listening. That would be the third one. Active listening, asking questions, using what they say as a springboard to the next topic. And now you never have to worry about what it is you're going to say next, because they've already told you what you're going to talk about next, and you can jump to it. You have to be careful. You don't want to go into interview mode, because God knows nobody wants to date Larry King, or at least not Larry King when he's on TV. But if you can share a little bit about how you relate to that question and then say, oh, but yeah, you said this, tell me about this thing, or what's the story with this other thing, and just keep the questions open-ended so you can't answer them with a yes or a no or a one or two-word answer, your conversation can go pretty much as long as you need it to.
I think you hit the nail on the head there with making statements as well as asking those open-ended questions to avoid the interrogator, because that happens a lot.
Yeah, no, there are two types of bad first dates I ever see, because I love listening in on other people's dates. It's hilarious. And it either comes from the guy who is doing all the talking or the guy who's doing all the interviewing. And both cases, you can just see whatever nascent attraction there was just fade away. Whereas someone who can maintain that balance, because it's easier if you think of a conversation like tennis or volleyball, where you're bouncing the ball back and forth. And if one person is holding on to the ball for too long, it gets really tedious and boring. So keep the conversation going, back and forth, back and forth. Let them have their thing, and you know, let them do a lot of the deeper talking. But find ways to relate to it. Find ways to connect with them on it. Share a little bit about yourself, too, but show your interest in them, and then it's really shockingly easy.
That's it. Now, do you have any favorite client stories or some of those light bulb moments where you just worked with someone and they just got it?
One of my favorite moments was talking with a guy. We were at an event, and he had mentioned that he kind of liked this one woman he saw sitting over across the way at the bar. And I said, "Okay, cool. You're going to go talk to her." He said, "The hell I am." I said, "Here's exactly what you're going to say. Hi, how do you know everybody?" Because this was an event where mingling was expected, so. There was no reason for him not to go up and talk to her. "Hi, how do you know everybody? My name is blah, blah, blah." He gets up. He goes over there. They're talking. I'm watching from a distance. It is going fantastically well. And then he turns around and walks back to me. And I'm looking at him like, "Why are you here? Why are you talking to me?" It's like, "Oh, no, we were done." It's like, "The hell you were? Get back over there. She was not done with you. And here's what you're going to do now. You're going to ask about this thing," because the DJ had just started playing. I think it was a mashup of Don't Stop Believing. So it's like, "All right, you're going to talk about this. Go." And it took two more times of me having to push him back into that interaction before he realized, "Oh, no, wait, she's really digging me. She's not just tolerating my presence." And then it was just, once that moment hit, all of a sudden his shoulders just dropped. Now he's not doing this. And suddenly, he is the suavest, funniest guy I have ever seen. It was just a moment of having to let the moment run, not believe that he was out. And just all of a sudden, once he relaxed, it was going like magic. And the only reason why they didn't end up hooking up was just because of pure logistics. But he got the phone number from her, and they stayed in contact for a while, and it was just... It was just one of those moments of the guy with so much potential and so much to offer who finally realized it, finally was able to accept it instead of just having to sit there going no, women don't like guys like me.
That's it. Sometimes you feel like a mother bird and you just have to keep pushing them out of the nest until they start flying.
Which, in fairness, had to be done to me a lot. That's one of the things that I really value about my time in the pickup scene is when I went on a boot camp, the guy who was teaching it basically kept shoving me, and occasionally literally, into situations. And every single time I came back out too early, he would shove me right back in. And it finally got to the point by the end of the night that I was not just able to go in and talking to people that I never thought I could talk to, but I was dealing with situations that I had not been prepared for, dudes rolling in trying to wedge me out of the conversation. And I was able to not only hold my own, but kind of not chase them off, but keep them out of it. And watching everybody else in the boot camp was watching that going I didn't think you were going to pull that off, but holy crap. And that was the most amazing feeling. And amusingly enough, that was also the only time I've ever dealt with guys trying to roll in and trying to take over the conversation with people I was talking to. So that fear of, what if other guys come in? It's like, nah, most of the time it's not going to happen. And more often than not, you can squeeze them out if you have to. But really, if someone is into you, she's not going to suddenly switch attention just because a new shiny object has come by.
That's it. That worst case scenario starts to kick in and you're like, oh, well, I guess I lost.
Yeah. Whereas more often than not, she didn't reject you. You rejected yourself. Because this is one of the things I had to unlearn from the pickup artist scene is that it's not like women and men do this too to women all the time too. Women have these same anxieties. Women do not have a checklist of, I'm going to compare you to my wants and what you have. And all right, so you have so many, but if somebody else comes along who has even more than you do, then I'm going to just switch over to them. That doesn't happen except for individuals who are just kind of jackasses to begin with. So it's not that, not anyone's going down a spreadsheet going do you have this? Do you have this? Do you have this? Do you have this? Acceptable. It is literally I like this guy. And if someone comes up, they're not going to suddenly go this guy's more impressive. I like this guy instead. More often than not, they're going to include them, but they're still going to focus on you. But if someone else comes up and you think they're, they're taller, they're better looking, they're richer, they're more intimidating, whatever, and you back out, you've lost. You've rejected yourself. You didn't give her a chance to say who she actually likes. You said, I'm taking this out of your hands because I don't think I have a chance. And as a result, she's more likely to go home with or go on a date with that guy because that guy stayed there and asked her out and you didn't. And if you had asked her out, you'd be the one having the date.
That's exactly it. You know, don't shoot yourself in the foot when you're out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the things about, like, the guys always complain about, like, why do assholes always get the girl? Well, they don't. But one of the reasons why people you think who are assholes get the girl is because more often than not, they're the ones who asked.
Right. And that, you've said that a few times, is go for the ask. Start that conversation. Ask for the phone number. Ask what they like. And if you never ask, you're never going to know.
Exactly. It's the old Gretzky saying. You miss 100% of the shots you never take.
Now, I know you are an inspiration to many who read all of your articles, but who would you say is an inspiration to you?
Honestly, it is so all over the place. I mean, especially when I was leaving the pickup artist scene, Mark Mason is a former pickup artist, and a lot of his stuff really resonated with me when I was leaving. So reading some of that and understanding, like, oh, there is life and sex after pickup, that really helped. And there were a lot of authors that I read too. In fact, I've got a lot of their books on my shelf. Sex at Dawn, especially with Christopher Ryan, was revolutionary in terms of, like, oh, all these ideas I had about sex and sexuality are completely off. Esther Perel, Mating in Captivity. Honestly, Neil Strauss too. Neil was really interesting to follow his journey and to talk with. I had a chance to talk with him, like, not that long ago, and how he kind of got in and also out of the pickup scene. And his new book, The Truth, is really fascinating because it was something that I don't think a lot of people quite kind of got, where he's going through this and, like, realizing, well, part of the reason he's so unhappy is because he's trying to pursue a lifestyle he doesn't actually want. Like, the truth is literally him trying to form an actual harem, like, where he is going to be living in a polyamorous situation with 5 women, all of whom are going to be, like, his exclusive girlfriends, and the nightmares that come with that. Because even for people who are poly, you have to have some really good communication and emotional management skills, and time management skills as well. And if you're not actually polyamorous, but you're trying to be, you're going to make everybody miserable, including yourself. And he learned the hard way that he didn't want the swinger lifestyle. He didn't want the poly lifestyle. He really did want to just settle down with the right person. And coming around to accepting that was really hard. And for some people, that's what they have to go through. I mean, when I was in the pickup scene, one of the things I always thought is, like, oh, I want to be the club guy. I want to go to the bars and go home with a new girl every night. And then realizing, like, no, actually, I hate most of the bars I'm going to. They're loud, they're smoky, they're overpriced, and I don't like the clientele. I've still got bars that I like going to, but they're very different. They have a very different atmosphere. But I also found the places where that resonated the most with me. So I'm not going to loud pickup joint. I'm going to quieter, more subdued place that's more fun to hang out in. And, you know, the fact that I'm relaxed there means that I am far more likely to connect with someone. And the people I'm going to connect with, I'm more likely to really have a strong connection with, not just a, oh, you like me, I like you, okay, we bang. Yeah, one of my rules after leaving the pickup artist scene was, all right, no more having sex with someone I can't have a conversation with.
Right. And, you know, you took that and you made your own comfort zone with the parts that you like, the parts that you didn't like, and you've, like I said earlier, you evolved to a second stage.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, just realizing all of that, took a long time, and I couldn't have done it if I hadn't actually pursued it in the first place. So I don't have any regrets for my time in there. I regret how I treated people. Different thing. But I had to go through a lot of stuff to realize what I actually wanted versus what I thought I wanted, or what worked for me versus what doesn't work for me.
And then now you're sharing it with the world, which is awesome.
Yeah, I kind of want to help people avoid the pain period I went through.
That's it. Now, I know you mentioned a few books earlier, but do you have any favorites or any other book recommendations?
Yeah, because a lot of what I suggest is getting to know, not technique, but understanding the reasons behind things. Like, there's books, like, I'm looking at my shelf right now. Obviously, Sex at Dawn is one that I would recommend, as is What Do Women Want? Because that helps you understand a lot more about human sexuality in general and female sexuality in particular. What Do Women Want? Is really interesting because it gets down into why so many social rules around sex and sexuality came about, and why we have these mistaken ideas, like women don't want sex as much as men do. Yes, they do. In fact, more often than not, they want it more than we do. We just have socially told women that it's bad for women to be sexual, except a very, very minor way. There's other stuff too, like How to Work a Room by Susan Rowan, or The Charisma Myth by Olivia Fox Cabane. I hope I pronounced her name right. Even some of the Robert Cialdini books are really useful, because they get into the guts of why things work and how it works, rather than looking at stuff and going like, all right, well, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. If you can get into the meta of it, then you can figure out ways that it will work for you without necessarily doing what the pickup artist scene did, which was backwards engineer a lot of high-pressure sales tactics. Because so much of what you see in the game and what is so much taught by the Venusian arts or love system or real personal dynamics and some of the other ones, it's literally backwards engineered car salesmen and stuff like the compliance ladder or using things like reciprocity and social proof are all ways of getting people to buy stuff or agree to stuff they don't actually want. So you don't want to do that. What you want to do is find out what convinces someone that they do want something and how to present yourself in a way that says, oh, I have what you want and you can come to me and we will have, like, I have this, you have that. Let's put them together, see what happens. Treating sex more like a jam session than a negotiation.
And there's an art to it. Sometimes it's a little bit backwards from what you wish that you could just, well, I just want to be upfront and say what I want to say, but there's an art and a way to do so. And if you study persuasion in those conversational tactics, it comes out much more naturally.
Oh yeah. There are a lot of great ways of bringing up the topic of sex and being direct about what you want, or, you know, not sex, but a date, a relationship, without just saying, I like you, let's fuck. Which admittedly sometimes can work. I've done it. It was weird. But there are ways of bringing it up in that feel much more natural, that feel more comfortable, that everybody would be more relieved to hear. And that's one of the things I like to suggest people do is study pop culture and usually specific characters. I mean, pop culture, it's a little hard to say, look at this movie and do what they do because everything happened because the script tells them to. But there are specific characters you can watch. One of my favorites to point to is Jack Harkness from Torchwood and Doctor Who, where if you can understand why people like this character and why they respond to him, then you can understand these are the things that you can find in you. Like, he is an example that I like to show of the ethical pickup artist, because his character is someone who will quite literally sleep with anything that moves and has sentience. So if it's alive and can consent, then he's interested in it. But he doesn't come across as sleazy or manipulative because he's into it for mutual fun, mutual pleasure, mutual consent. Whatever you're into, he's willing to try. If you're not into it, hey, not a problem. And that's part of what a lot of people respond to. So, okay, cool. If you want to be a pickup artist, if you want to be a guy who gets a lot of sex, then studying this and realizing, all right, well, here are ways that I can incorporate that into my life. Give you things to look at and kind of ask yourself, all right, in this situation, what would Jack Harkness do? Other times it can look at stuff like, look at Chris Evans as Captain America, if you want an amazing example of non-toxic masculinity. Like, he is unquestionably a very traditionally masculine man, but he also does it in a way that isn't like, you know, chest beating, thumping, you know, come at me, bro. He does it in a way that is open, that's positive, that is supportive, that is emotionally vulnerable at times. And that is a great way to be if that is more your jam.
I think we've circled it a few times. And the big factor here is that people need to take that 5, 10, 15 minutes and go through the process of self-discovery and figure out what do they really want and then move forward on it.
Exactly. And don't be afraid to find out that, like, to try things and realize that what you want is not what you actually wanted. Sometimes that's the only way you learn. I spent a lot of time trying to be an artist. And I mean like a professional artist, a photographer and a graphic illustrator. And I spent years chasing that career before I finally had to realize, like, no, that actually wasn't what I wanted to do. But I thought it was, and I think I would have regretted it if I hadn't pursued it. But now, you know, now I'm older and wiser, and I've gone through that, and now I realize, okay, cool. I chased it. It wasn't what I wanted. Now I do know what I want, and I'm much happier for it.
That's it. Now, I know you've name-dropped quite a few people during this interview, but if you could have a conversation with anyone, past, present, future, real or fictional, who would it be?
Oh, I do not even know. Honestly, I would have to say, this is going to be such a damn cliche, but I would have to say Casanova.
Yeah?
Yeah, Don Juan and Casanova are two of the most famous, you know, seducers in history. And this is one of those times, like, I would be really interested in, you know, one fictional, one is real. I would be interested in kind of talking to them and finding out their outlook and how things changed within their time versus, like, the social norms of now. Because a lot of our relationship models are changing now. And to some people, that's causing anxiety. And, you know, because we don't date the way that we used to, we have so many more options. Cool. How are we going to approach that? How are we going to, you know, deal with this new, brave new world that we're in? And sometimes looking at people who kind of broke the social taboos of the era are a good way to see kind of like, all right, well, here's what happened way back then, whether it was in a character that was created or a person who actually existed.
I like that. That's a great answer. Now, a few questions to wrap up here. Is there anything that you're currently working on project-wise, or how can our audience find out more about you?
Well, the easiest way to keep track of what I'm doing is to follow me on Twitter at drnerdlove and join the Facebook page at facebook.com/drnerdlove. There's also the Dr. Nerdlove mailing list, which goes out every Sunday, which kind of sums up everything that I've written that week. And you can sign up for that on the website, drnerdlove.com. The big thing I'm doing right now is with, I've got a Patreon, and my first stretch goal is going to be, if I get up to this level, I'm going to take the podcast, and now it's going to be a YouTube channel. And I just hit that last week, so now I'm starting to lay in supplies, make the plans, get the equipment, and sort of build up to starting doing more video work too. So that's coming within the new year. And beyond that, I've got two new books that I'm working on. It's just a question of whether they're going to be self-published or whether I'm going to be going to another publisher. So, yeah, this is looking to be really exciting. And now that I've been doing private coaching, and at some point in the near future, I am probably going to do a boot camp or two for people who want to get, you know, a full weekend of intensive training.
So lots and lots going on in the Dr. Nerdlove camp. I'll make sure to add descriptions in the link below for everything so people can find everything easily. And final question, is there anything that you wish I had asked, or any final words of wisdom?
Final words of wisdom, because this was a great interview. This was really fun. Final words of wisdom is to not look at other people and try to second guess what they're doing. One of the things that comes up a lot, and I'm actually writing about this on Monday, is that whenever I've written about any topic, I mean, I could be saying, you know, be sure to shower every week, and someone will write back, yeah, well, I know this guy who smells like cat piss and he gets girlfriends, is that when you don't want to judge other people, like your life based on other people. You don't know what's going on with them. Even the people that you think are breaking all the rules have something going on that you're not seeing. You are seeing their highlight reel compared to your unedited footage. So don't look at other people as your landmark or your yardstick as to what you should be doing, because they're doing their thing and you don't know everything that's going on. The guy who seems like he's got a new girl every week, cool. He's got a new girl every week. That he may be attracting them, but apparently he can't keep them. The guy who seems to be a complete asshole, why has he got a girlfriend and you don't? Well, you don't know what he's offering in private or what it is about him that's attracting her. It's not necessarily that she's an asshole. It could well be, well, he's got access to drugs and he likes dating girls who like drugs. Or it could be, he seems like an asshole to you, but to her, he's actually really sweet and giving. You don't know. So focus less on what other people are doing and more on how you can make your best, most authentic self happen. Because people are going to connect with that. And that is how you're going to find the people that you want, not the people that other people are dating.
I really think, you know, the way that you wrapped it up, it touches on so many things that we covered in the interview and wraps it up in a nice, perfect bow for everyone there.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. So I thank you once again for joining us. This has been a blast. We had a great conversation. I'm going to have a heck of a time writing a description for this, but it was a lot of fun. And once again, I truly appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you. It was really awesome. I'm glad we were able to make this happen.
Absolutely.
And that's all, folks. What did you think? Let us know your favorite thing that you learned in the comments in the section below. And if you know someone who's got a little bit of social anxiety or they're looking to find Mrs. or Mr. Wright, go ahead and maybe it should be Miss Wright, not Mrs. But anyway, if you know someone who could learn a thing or three from this interview, go ahead and be a pal. Send them the link to this video. I know that they will most certainly appreciate it. Below, I've included the links to Harris's website, books, courses, all the information. So I've made it super easy for you. Just read down below. There's not a whole lot of text, not too terribly difficult. And as always, click subscribe right down there in the corner so that you never miss a video. Every Wednesday, we've got new interviews coming your way from the top experts and influencers so you can get the very best tips right from the source. As always, check us out on the web, lifessecretsauce.com, and you can check out, as always, check us out on the web at lifessecretsauce.com to find out what we are up to. Until next time, ciao for now.